ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
2 years into the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and the country is now one of the most mine-littered countries in the world. About a third of Ukraine is contaminated by landmines and other explosives as a result of the war. Washington has now approved a $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, which included a $100 million provision for landmine clearance in the nation. But aid groups warn that massive effort to clear the mines could take generations and cost tens of billions of dollars. Pete Smith is head of demining in Kyiv for the Halo Trust, which has been demining war zones since 1988. I spoke with Pete earlier.
Good morning, Fran, and thank you very much indeed for having me on with you.
Pete, just give us a sense, can you, of how big a threat landmines are in Ukraine, comparatively, I suppose, to countries that we are very familiar with, countries like Cambodia or Mozambique?
Well, I think the scale of the explosive hazards out here is, you know, comparable to many of those countries you just mentioned. I mean, Ukraine obviously still is a country in conflict at this time, and therefore there's, you know, continual explosive minefields and other items that are being discovered in and around many of the oblasts.
So what's the level of contamination? How many mines are we talking about? Do we have any sense of that?
I think when we take a rough estimate and look around the country as a whole, you know, we are estimating in the region of several million mines that are either within the southern and eastern areas of Ukraine, those areas that are yet to be occupied, but also the oblasts such as Mykolaiv, Kherson and oblasts. I mean, I recently took the opportunity to walk down a minefield in Kherson, and I walked for about 1.5 kilometres, and there was a TM-62, which is an anti-vehicle mine, every 1 metre of that walk. The TM-62 mine is an anti-vehicle mine. It's about the size of a dinner plate, but has about 12 kilograms of high explosives in it. And that just gives you an indication of one small part of one oblast in Ukraine at the moment.
And so they're laying these to stop the Ukrainian troops advancing, is that it?
Absolutely. And to hold ground. You know, clearly, you know, Russia has taken considerable territory away from Ukraine. And these defensive belts are just part and parcel of a way of denying military forces from recovering that territory.
And are these mines visible from the surface?
It's a combination of both. Some are just surface laid, some are buried, and then a number in between the two. And of course, they're not always lovely, long, linear lines like that. Yeah. A number of the areas I was visiting last week down in Kharkiv and in Mykolaiv. Now, the complexity is such that you've got anti-personnel mines, which are much, much smaller, probably about 400 grams of explosives, intermixed with some of these anti-vehicle mines. And then you've also got in strip woods, in villages, in other communities that were occupied, you have grenades or OZM, which are bounding fragmentation mines that are activated by a tripwire. So you've got a real sense of a complex mix of really challenging types of devices that are so difficult to locate, largely because if you can picture Tasmania in your mind and then double that, that's about the scale of effort that's still left to try and identify where these explosive hazards are currently sat.
So you've got to identify them before you can start trying to deactivate them and clear them, and all this while war is raging. So, I mean, what you're talking about is these anti-personnel mines, but also booby traps, effectively. And then what about unexploded munitions? Because there would be much of that around, wouldn't there?
There is, and of course they tend to accumulate each day. I mean, I think if you took an average day maybe of 1,000 artillery rounds or other rounds like that being exchanged across the contact zone, you know, that gives you some 365,000 rounds a day. And we typically average about between 5 and 10% of those rounds will not function as intended. So that's some 18,000 UXOs just in that 1,000 a day. So it's a significant number of unexploded ordnance that we're equally presenting threats to local civilians.
So they present a threat. What damage are they doing? How many civilians have been killed or maimed by mines since the war began? Do we know that?
Since February 2022, we've counted some 1,130 or so civilian accidents with mines and other explosive items. And of those incidents, some 1,700 casualties, of which roughly about 500 or so have been sadly fatal. And of course, those continue to rise.
Before the war, Ukraine was one of the world's largest agricultural exporters. How much of Ukraine's farmland, usable farmland, is contaminated with unexploded ordnance now?
That's a very difficult thing to estimate. I mean, what I can say is certainly from the Ukrainian government's perspective, it is a very high priority to get agricultural land back into productive use and quickly, not least because, of course, you know, Ukraine was a major exporter of grain and wheat, and that contributes significantly, not just its own GDP, but more widely. And of course, you know, that includes not just large farms that are tens of thousands of hectares, but also the smaller farms, maybe 300 hectares or something similar, that have individual farmers on there that are farming for their own livelihood. So it is attracting a great deal of attention. But if you can just imagine the large scale of land, you can just get a sense of just how difficult it is to be able to muster the amount of explosive ordnance operators, deminers, machines, etc., that are required to remove all of these explosive hazards.
And how are you doing that? Who's doing this dangerous work for HALO? Are you training locals? Are you bringing in experts from other places? What's going on?
So for HALO, we went through a large expansion last year. So I currently have and trained 1,200 Ukrainian men and women, and they're trained to conduct either what we call manual demining, which is with a detector, and then either mechanical demining, which is the use of some of the remote platforms that we have that can obviously make things a little safer, but also bring a bit more efficiency into that task. I mean, proudly, of those 1,200 deminers that I mentioned who are out there every single day doing this task, regardless of, you know, winter or the hot summer, some 30% of those are women as well, and not just deminers, but all the way up the command chain to a unit commander who has leadership over some 300 of our Ukrainians.
Is that unusual to have so many women doing this work, and is that just a reflection of the fact that the men of Ukraine are on the front line?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, we, the HALO Trust, like many other organisations, seek to try and get as much equality in what it is that we're doing, because, of course, men and women are equally affected by the dangers. And, of course, it's a job and a role, whilst physically demanding and requires great deals of concentration, it really can be done by any able-bodied person. And I have, you know, significant members of the community that come who have had previous backgrounds, either as, you know, nail specialists, hairdressers, butchers, all of those sorts of people that are coming in and wanting to do their part to help the recovery of Ukraine.
And how fast is this work? Of those millions, I think you told us several million mines and unexploded ordnance now as a result of this 2 years of this war, how fast are they being decontaminated?
The interesting thing, of course, is we're still doing this within conflict. So what we've got to be able to make sure that we do is not invest our clearance assets or our time into those areas where there's the potential for them to be recontaminated. So we deliberately take the opportunity from the humanitarian demining sector to be in those areas where we're at greatest, you know, help and contribution to communities to help rebuild their lives. I think if you were to take government estimates, which we certainly believe at this point, that some 10,000 deminers over about a 10-year period is likely to get about 80% of that challenge removed. But of course, you know, until the war is over, that's not going to be entirely clear.
Okay, so 10,000 over 10 years, you've got 1,200, and the fighting's still going on, so it's going to be a long time.
It's fair to say there are other organisations involved in mine clearance here as well. There are a number of national organisations. And of course, you know, within the military and the state emergency services, there are also, you know, a number of deminers or sappers, as they call them, in those organisations as well. So I think we're probably collectively up to about 4,500 required to be able to start this enormous task ahead of us.
I visited Cambodia recently, and an organisation there that was training giant African rats to clear mines. We all know about dogs being used. Are these animals being used in Ukraine?
Well, I'm not aware of rats in Ukraine at this particular point, but certainly dogs will have some utility out here. And I know a number of organisations are now starting to think about employing dogs in the ability, really with a view to either detect or to prove the presence of no mines, if you know what I mean. So, yes, certainly for dogs, but nothing I've heard so far about rats.
What about technology? What about satellites? What about, you know, heat identifying technology? What about drones? Is that being employed?
It is. I mean, a lot of the non-technical survey, we call it, which is that, you know, desk-type assessments or non-intrusive assessments into land, is where we use a combination of remote sensing. So we are using satellite imagery, but then our men and women on the ground are using drones, mainly with optical sensors, but we are experimenting more into thermal and other types of sensors, which helps us really to identify where the threat is, but also, as important, where the threat is not, and therefore we don't need to invest expensive clearance activities into those spaces. So it's a combination of all of those, but also talking to the local communities. You know, many of the Ukrainians stayed here throughout the war and didn't move, notwithstanding the millions, of course, that were internally displaced and those that left the country. But many stayed. And, of course, they are also a very good source of information to understand what actually happened in terms of the battle in and around the village or their community. And, of course, they, not only through what they observe, but also through accidents either themselves or their own livestock, helps us again to identify and focus those satellite and those drone images, which again just makes it much more efficient for us.
Pete Smith, we're 2 years into this war. Do you believe Ukraine will ever be without mines?
I sincerely hope so. I think the energy, the innovation, the drive of the Ukrainian people tends to make me believe that's absolutely going to be the case. But of course, we have seen the Second World War. There are still great swathes of lands in Europe that are unfortunately inaccessible because of the legacy of some of the explosive hazards back from then. So I think absolutely we'll get through and get as quickly as possible to a position where we've significantly reduced the number of mines that threaten civil communities. But I think it's not possible to say you're going to get every single last mine out of the ground. But that's certainly the aim, and that's our mission alongside a number of our Ukrainian counterparts and indeed other NGOs.
It's a huge task, and we wish you luck with it. Pete, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Fran, and thank you for having me on today.
So incredible always to me that so many people put their hand up to do such a task. That's Pete Smith, head of demining in Kyiv for the charity group Halo Trust.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.